Pass seconds. Yeah, wait for the fire to come.
Okay.
Beep!
Okay, now you can go.
Okay, welcome to this week Linux Geeks Group. How are you doing?
Fine.
Fine.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm done being sarcastic unless you want me to keep being sarcastic.
No, yeah, no, it's fine. I don't know, nobody's talking. So, who wants to start? First thing what we do is 2 minutes of the thing. So we go around the room and we say whatever we are and whatever happened last week and whatever we want to share.
I'll start then. I will start for a little
bit. Go ahead.
It really sucked this week because a pipe broke in our basement and spilled water all over the place. So I spent most of my time cleaning out our basement and not doing much of this stuff.
That would be a consideration.
Yeah. But at work, I put on the new ESXi and tested that out and see how Linux compatible it was. So when we get to that news article, I'll give an update on it.
I'll be listening.
Other than that, I didn't do much of other Linux stuff.
How about you?
My name is Colin. I'm new to the Eau Claire Linux Users Group. I think it'll be an interesting time. I think it was pretty good for me. It's another week. Work goes in, work goes out. I think it's funny. So it's
really good. Are you going to school or?
No, I work here.
Don't work?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't go to school.
Yeah, I went to school in a different state and just kind of hung out for a
reason. Okay, I'm glad you're in Wisconsin. Very good, thank you.
I'm Will. I listened to you guys last week. Really, honestly, not much of a Linux user. I understand and appreciate it. I definitely want to get more into it, but I've been mostly a Windows user in the past, but I am also an open source software advocate. So. Pretty good
try.
Not much
that we
need last week. Just working, trying
and
learn
how to learn. I guess our focus is mainly learning, but open source. So, if you are not ready to go to Linux, it's okay.
He is Brian Truther right now, so.
He might make a joke about you, but welcome to this group.
You'll have to keep the SUSE jokes down to a minimum today.
SUSE?
You'll have to pick on Fedora or something.
Fedora, yeah.
Or something else.
Well, thanks for coming. How about you?
I'm looking to buy a house. That's been my week.
That's a pretty good market to buy a house.
Yeah, hopefully within a week I'll know for sure. So we're going to put an offer in on Friday. A million miles away from where I work.
Nice.
Like the weekend calls and, well, you know, it's going to take me.
Not a million miles from work. We had to go to two decimal places in order to get accurate enough for it to even matter.
Oh, okay.
So
just so you know.
Yeah.
So where is the house?
Don't tell him. Yeah, so we'll buy it out from under you.
How many miles from here it is? How many?
Three, four. How far away from us?
Okay, you passed. Okay.
Oh,
you can buy the house.
See, that was a trick question.
Yeah, it's time for you.
If he doesn't come every week, he doesn't have an excuse.
Yes, yes. And then you have to sell your house if you don't have that. I'm not really that tough,
but that's pretty much been it for me.
Very good. So, yeah, it's summer. It's summer. Everybody should be enjoying this thing. Cool. How about you guys?
Well, this was a filming week, but I've still been doing a lot of putting new. Jim swapped out the hard drive on this and just says it with Linux now.
Oh, sure.
So.
32-bit. This is that Dell 1525, which really I'm not that thrilled with, honestly. But it's okay. I mean, it's light and handy to use. The main thing I've been doing is I was messing around with Jack D, and I built Jack Tools, the Jack Toolkit. And I'm disappointed in the ALSA performance. It may be the sound card. I really get better performance out of OSS, but you know, you can't do as many things with it. So it may be that I have a you collect a lot of libraries to do it. And I also built that Q jack control, and also a QT ALSA Connect. And I don't have exactly all the versions matching. I mean, it's only the last numbers of the versions, and maybe some of the lack of performance is due to that, because I've done everything else. I changed some things in the memory. You know, it's basically better to run the audio stuff as root. There's some problems with that, so I changed some of the group memberships so that audio belongs and has root access to the kernel without me having to be running as root. And I also have the temp directory is a RAM file system. So and it's gotten better. And I also maxed up the buffer, but it's still not perfect. I still get occasional little hesitations that, you know, I can hear. But it's way better than before I made those changes.
Have you looked at these settings, the frames per period and the period per buffer? Those are really the two settings.
Yeah, okay.
For your sound card, mm-hmm. Depending on the sound card, it kind of works on a rolling buffer system where it'll have this many chunks.
I think I have that set to 2.
Right. You increase it to 4, mm-hmm. You'll increase your latency. Like, you can see the latency doubles.
Okay. Yeah, but I want to get the latency down.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you increase it, then that decreases the number of glitch that will occur because of the kernel. Usually, and a lot of times too, it's because of not having a real-time kernel.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's right.
The kernel that you have really makes a difference.
Sure.
What
It's a generic with 7.10.
Ubuntu.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know Fedora has at the what's it called? Karma at Home. They have a real-time kernel that they built specifically for the Fedora operating system that you can play.
Yeah,
with
something Studio. Ubuntu Studio has to.
Yeah, but if you look in
Mm-hmm.
You'll find, if you look for a kernel, you'll find out real time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll look for that.
You can install it, and then you can have options.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to try that.
Sure, I will. Yeah, and there's also, I don't know much about that generic kernel yet, but I know there's actually some commands you can give to kernel space that will tell it not to do certain things that otherwise it would go ahead and do, and that's supposed to also increase the likelihood of running into those dropouts. So a decrease, I should. I don't know. Did I say increase? I meant to make it less, you know, likely to happen.
Yeah.
Good.
One other thing too. There's some settings that you can set on your PCI. Sometimes it's in the BIOS.
What? Yeah. I think that's what these kernel adjustments have to do with, right?
It's the latency of the cards, and generally you want that set low enough so that it gets priority. Pretty much what it does is it sets aside, okay, 32 ticks, this card has access if it wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, depending on the video card too, video cards will bump theirs up to 64 or even mm-hmm. 128. And what that can do is it can starve out the other cards.
Sure.
Because mm-hmm. everyone assumes, oh, you want perfect video.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want the sound, then you actually have to go in and bump the video back down and maybe bump the sound card up to 64.
Right.
So the sound card gets that throughput.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff to look at.
Yeah. And other than that, we're fixing a simple leak, but, you know, when you plunk, you better be able to take the day off. So we put a wrench on it, and instead we broke the pipe in the wall. So, you know, water was off, but it took a little... We get the water back on, you know.
Yeah.
So I might have gotten more done with with Ubuntu if I had to deal with that.
Did you actually know when it bursted? My wife just by fluke happened to stop home just to drop off a bag of carrots so it wouldn't get warm in the car. She just reached in the door and sat down. She heard a noise. And here this pipe had broken and had started letting me up with so much water in her basement and stuff.
Was it that you were supposed to shut your water from the city?
Well, she didn't know where to. She had to call me because she had no idea how to turn the water on.
So good with this.
I had to call at work. There's water all over the place. How do I turn it on? He just said, I was wondering where it was, and yeah, turned it off. I mean, but all it was on the downstairs sink, did not flow, and the pipe just.
pop off one day. Something.
He'll come to this place, happens every winter, twice. Maybe not anymore, but let us finally try to listen to us and rechange the directional pipe. But boy, it froze every winter. It's going 10 below, it's freezing, and if it stays frozen for too many days, it will bust when it goes warm.
Unfortunately, it'll probably bust. Or probably breaks, and then when it melts, then that's when it probably starts
to yes.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
And last time it was actually a Sunday when we closed. Lucky he had met with somebody privately here. We would have locked in. But the good thing is the basement here is so loose, it disappears right away.
I don't have anything else.
Well, just thank you. How about you,
Byron? I did some stuff. I finally got my Myth TV box set up with the high def card. It works great. Found out that the cable system here broadcasts all the local stations unencrypted. So the high def card works with the standard cable.
Was it a hotspot?
No, it was one of those HDTV, the ones that were specifically for Linux.
It has a penguin on it.
There's actually a penguin on the card, so that's really why I bought it.
I bought one, so I wanted the same thing.
Yep, you can just plug it into the cable system, and all of, I think there's like 6 or 7 channels that are, is it that many? Maybe five or six channels that are unencrypted. PBS channels, there's 4.
There's 4.
Yep.
One of them is just like little kiddie programming all day long, because
that's like 6,
but.
Yeah, in my family, that would be.
Right.
But the normal box for a rabbit is the signal, because we live close to here, comes really weak at. Because a lot of times you get no signal. Yeah, channel 30 is the same.
And actually.
But there's a cable, I've heard this before, if you have a standard cable and you put this converter box in, there's like ESPN and some of them send out HD, and for some reason the cable is not capable of really sorting it out. So you getting for your $20 cable, you get the $50 flavor.
Mm-hmm. Well, at some point I was able to get pay-per-views. If somebody asked you to order pay-per-view, I was able to watch it, but I cannot do that anymore.
I did that too for a while.
Yeah.
About 2 months ago, they finally cut it off.
And when the person didn't like the part and forward, fast forward,
it was all. So you put another channel. They had like a bank of like 10 channels.
Yeah, and then just
go to the next one in line. Oh, yeah, someone's watching this one. You can watch it along the way. They decided to turn it.
Here's an interesting thing, too. They send the standard definition channels through the digital signal. So you don't get the high def stations, but you get the digital, you can add digital. So they look significantly better. The colors are a lot better than you'd get with the standard capture card. And along with that, I also installed MythDora 5. I was on board. Yeah. Well, I was using MythDora the whole way through.
I was using
MythBuntu, and I had a lot of problems with it. And MythDora just released a new version, so I got that. And it actually worked really well. I mean, the only thing that was kind of a hassle was setting up the digital stations, because there's nothing that ties Charter's digital stations to the actual stations that it shows.
Totally wrong.
Right. Their cable box translates everything from channel 840 to, you know, your channel 720.
Yeah. So did you have to put in like a frequency table?
I didn't have to do the frequency table. All I had to do was go in and auto scan for channels, and then it got all the channels, and then I actually had to go in and assign.
Because a lot of them probably get a signal through or it's just black.
Yeah, well, so no, it actually has an option to skip encrypted channels. So you scan and say skip any channels that are encrypted.
But these aren't even, unless they're encrypted, they actually show up black, but they come up and say there's a signal there, but they're just not displaying anything at this time.
I didn't see any of those. So maybe they encrypt everything.
Maybe they should just have a scan.
Maybe they encrypted it so you don't see them.
Right.
So that was kind of a hassle because you had to watch the, you know, pretty much you turn on at 9 o'clock and go, what news is on? Okay, well, that's what channel it is.
Yeah.
And then you have to go on Schedules Direct to look up the XML tag entry for that station, because every station's got, you know, a little XML, like 6-digit number that associates the channel with the guide information.
I guess right now you've done the work so you can share the file.
Yes, I could do that.
Now, could you test this out with just a live CD, or did you have to actually install it on your system?
I don't know if they have a live CD or not.
Okay. So how many channels all together do you get?
Not very many, because we just get basic cable.
We have basic cable.
$13 a month, basic cable.
These new digital ones.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, we could get most of them over the air, too, for
and
the digital.
Your credit card also gets the analog in, correct?
Yeah, actually, well, I've got my old analog tuner in there as well.
Okay.
So it can actually record two shows at once.
Yeah.
One on standard, one on high def.
Actually, I got in the mail a few weeks ago, I got the Charter is going to realign their offering.
Yeah, they're
going to
do it.
So
well.
It might actually screw up your
August 19th,
yeah.
I know.
August 19th, we have the little listing.
Yes.
But it doesn't help us. We're... Here's what I'm hoping, that they're changing it on the front end and not on the back end. So the channels stay the same, they're just sending out some signal to update their set-top tuners.
You're hoping very nice.
If they don't, I'll just go through and do it again.
I've
already done it once, so it'll only take half the amount of time.
Yeah, they're proficient.
We had a system. He was on the laptop picking it up. I was on the keyboard for the computer entering it all in.
But yeah, those high def stations look extremely good compared to the analog signal.
And so what cable do you have going between your system and the TV?
VGA. Okay. Just a VGA. The bare bones PC that I got didn't have a DVI out, otherwise I'd use that.
You don't want to go through HDMI to encrypt it?
Yeah, whatever. DVI would have been good enough. Right. The signal that I'm getting over the cable system. So I actually had to get a new PC. It's a AMD 4600X2, 2 gig of RAM. I got a 750 gig hard drive in there. It's pretty much sitting at 100% CPU usage all the time doing transloading.
Yeah.
Just for the IE part, right?
Oh, yeah, and
tell
1 hour of...
Tell me again what it is.
4600X2.
So
it's AMD.
I've got a 3800X2.
That should do it. It's going through and doing all the transcoding, because
right.
Without transcoding, an hour worth of video is about... No, six.
Oh,
six
I'm
and a half gig.
Hour.
Yeah.
With encoding, it's 1.5 gig. So, significant space saver, and you can't tell the quality difference once it's done. So
if you have 1 terabyte, you don't have to transfer.
It depends on how many hours you want. I mean,
you've got to clean it up afterwards.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, we're recording 3-4 stations a day, or 3-4 or 3-4 programs a day, so that's 4 or 5 hours.
Yes.
We don't watch all of it.
4
we record
gig per
it.
Hour?
Six.
Six.
Six. Six.
Okay.
That's pretty hefty.
We've had a 750 hard drive in there.
I'm
still
paying attention to that.
Well, Mythdora has auto expire, so as it wants to record new stuff, it'll expire things that are the oldest, and then also has priorities so that if you watch this, it gives it a lower priority, so it deletes before the stuff you haven't watched. So it's pretty smart about it.
One little thing I found out when playing around with that one is DVI and HDMI.
Yeah.
Just remember that DVI doesn't pass through audio. So
yes, as well as VGA.
Well, it won't pass through audio at all. It's strictly a digital video interface.
Yep.
HDMI will pass through audio.
Yes.
So I don't know if any video cards out there that have an HDMI output on it.
A lot of HDMI cards from what's an adapter for their DVI ports that actually do support
the audio through
on the 2000 series of plan, actually.
Hmm.
On the NVIDIA or on
the NVIDIA? NVIDIA only has like one card that does it.
Okay.
I think it's like the 8500 they have for PCI Express.
Okay, interesting.
So one thing I noticed too, the sound is a lot better quality than over the analog. Significantly better.
Yeah, visual audio for television is definitely.
Sure, it's better or just.
No, it's better. If you want to come over and watch it, it's better.
When are we coming?
The offer wasn't for you.
It's family. All right. You can come over.
Yeah. I could bring the PC and I could bring the PC and plug it into that. It wouldn't be that hard.
Yeah.
Or rabbit ears.
Is that your 2 minutes of fame?
Yeah, that? That's my 2 hour fame.
Alright, what about you, Amanda?
I just worked and tried to get my TVs off.
Do you hang in line?
It's hard.
It's hard.
Although I finally bugged him, he has this little presentation ready.
I don't know if I want to get it. Alright, maybe I will. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. Well, great. Fantastic. What they do. I've been working with this program, QCAD. It's kind of an AutoCAD type program that finally got it all figured out, or close to all figured out. Pretty neat when you actually use it. Then we got our high speed internet, so I can actually watch streaming video, which is unbelievable for me. So that's kind of neat, actually. A lot of stuff on there I couldn't take advantage of before. So then it's summertime, so I got other things to do other than my computer. So no pipes in the basement broke here.
Lucky you.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I've been lately. So oh yeah, I guess.
Oh, nice. I wasn't doing a lot of. Computer stuff. This is what I had in mind. And I actually couldn't sleep for 2 nights to figure out how I'm going to do it. Whoever is listening, we are looking for a home brewing fermenter right now. And I figured it out, and it is $150. And it should make 5 gallons of beer. We shall see what quality is going to be. Everybody's going to say that it's going to be much better, but we shall see when we test what is done. So that was my thing. The other thing was I was trying to get a person in the library for the Software Freedom Day, and I didn't have very good luck. So I guess probably tomorrow I'm going to call him again, and maybe on Saturday to stop stuff there. What to do with all if they want to participate, or you know, we need to be looking for alternate location, which I don't have any, you know, suggestions. What would be as good location as the library? If we would have a location, then we maybe could go.
It's in September, right?
It is in September, third week in September. But you.
The universities are open by then.
I found.
What is typically the what goes on there? Do you expect vendors to come in, or
no,
do you?
It is promotion of your software. So what you should do, you should register with on a website, and it's softwarefreedomday.org, and you should say this is a team and this is our plan. And I think first 300 teams they provide with support, so they send some CDs. Or they send some t-shirt or balloons or whatever. And, but you can do it on your own. So the hardest portion is how to convince people, if you are giving them CDs, that it's not a malware or some kind of virus. So how are you going to make professional, or let's say, if we would say, if you are going to target Windows users with the free software, then we need to make our own CD. Which is for sure looking.
You looking for us?
And I found this Jackson CD duplication.
Yeah, I found that one too, and was looking at it.
Which they are doing the printouts. So if we would have a venue, and if we would know that we can do it, we can go there and can say, would you guys like to participate? Now, maybe I want to pay $125 for 100, or maybe I can go to my employer and say, this is a community event, would my employer like to participate in a certain way. So if you have a venue, you can go and you can drum up a more support or a little bit money, even though we don't do it for money. Mostly the cost is what we will absorb anyway. If we do it just, I don't know what we do for, but that's what we do.
So if you were a musician, you could get CDs made from all that price, nice looking ones for.
Yeah, they print actually, what they do, they print on one side, whatever you want.
Back printing?
Yeah.
Excuse me? It's not silk screen? It's not silk screen? Normally when
I
I don't think it's good, the silk screen on the CD, because it unbalances the spin of the CD.
That's how most are printed though.
Really?
When you're doing quantity over like 20.
Yeah, they'll just have like the one color.
Yeah,
or a couple color.
But that's how most CDs are done.
Is it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I didn't either. I thought most of them were that. I thought most of them were that thermo printing thing that they did.
Yeah, really, but the thermo printer might be more expensive. Don't that CD is worth it? Really good for.
Yeah, I would just be afraid that the weight would unbalance the CD when it's spinning. I just write on mine with an indelible lens.
We'll just make some stickers and slap them on there.
So if I can actually, you know, drum up and send anybody in the library, I probably would need to have somebody out here to do something. Or, A, we find an alternate location, or we need to go there every day and say, where's the person who's supposed to do community support or community work? Because I wrote an email, you know, and I said, I'd like, would you like that of the library? Would you, partnership with the Linux user group to organize this event.
Send them a letter.
Yeah, but and I was saying, well, all what you would do, you would just provide the venue, and we would staff it, we would provide material, and we would organize the event. And also, and it, for opening a library, really wouldn't be any hassle per se. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of meeting spaces at the university library. And it's got this huge quarter that, you know, we always used to joke they ought to open it out for dances and weddings. You know, but that would be perfect.
It's at the university, you know, at the main McIntyre.
It's just in the university, we would have to do it probably on Friday, or during the work days. Is there plenty of traffic throughout the weekend?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Because I thought, you know, it's like in a public library, there's actually a lot of traffic over the Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I guess there really is probably more at the public library than the university. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, because, I mean, there'll be a lot of students there, but they may be there for what they came to do.
Yes.
And how much you could pull them away from what they're doing to do something else, it's hard to say.
But on a weekend, that's the only time that somebody who's not at the university already could find a place to park.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. Parking
that's a good
here
point.
Is terrible. Yeah, actually, my feeling is that it's probably more appropriate the public library. What you're trying to do here?
Yes.
I mean, you're not really targeting the university community at all.
Yes, that's so like if I would want. Yes, as you said, I don't know exactly where the building is at the university, and I don't know how, you know.
Well, that part we could fill you in on pretty easy.
I know, but for regular, you know.
Yeah, no, I think what your obvious orientation here is, which is a good one. I mean, is that you should stay in a more, you know, Eau Claire venue than, because there's always a, you know, separation between the community there and the community in the town. So. I mean, the Freenet, we tried for a long time to get under the university umbrella, and they weren't interested. They really were not interested at all. So, and we always thought that was a bad move on their part, but in other words, you're not going to gain anything by trying to get yourself noticed at the university. It's not going to help at all.
And I know that the library is doing something really diverse. So let's say here's annual Chippewa Valley Book Fest, you know, and it is sponsored and even organized by library.
No. Mm-hmm.
So,
do you really want to stay in Eau Claire? Because actually, we had a lot of the Freenet meetings were up at the library in Chippewa. We just found that we got more people when we went up there. So I mean, it's you know, I mean, it's, you, if you want to stay in Eau Claire, I mean, you know, that's one thing. But if you want to go up there,
we could split, you know, to make two different groups and to have one here and the other one over there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, typically we would get like 25 to 40 people at meetings here in town, and we'd get over 100 people at meetings up at the Chip Library. The other place that actually we got some support, and I don't know whether you've looked into these things at all, was at Ayers. I don't know why, but they were interested. Ayers and then that plastic place, mm-hmm. but they're out of business now. Over in that new, you know, that as you go, that's what's called Sky something or another. You know, as you get to the end of, you know, if you turn by the athletic fields there off of Stein Boulevard and go all the way down, you hit the highway again. There's like an industrial. Yes. There was a plastics place there, and for some reason. Yeah, well, not there anymore. And I honestly, this is, you know, keep talking 8 years ago. I can't remember. Yeah, Ayers is the surveyors. Yeah, oh, no, not Ayers. But this was the plastics place over by 35 there. But that, for some reason, I think the guy who was, you know, the manager there was trying to get Linux stuff going for his you know, to run the stepper motors on his machinery and stuff like that. So maybe that's why he was interested in the Linux crowd coming over there. But then again, you know, for some reason, Ayers too, and I don't know why, but they would very often let us use their meeting areas and stuff like that for trying to get meetings together. So you might look in around and see if there's any, you know, companies here in town that would be interested in somehow affiliating themselves with the group too. I mean, that was.
So let's pursue the Yoke Library.
Yeah, there's certainly nothing wrong with that, and that's certainly a good place to do it. And they have nice facility. It's a, you know, it's a nice place to be.
Would we be able to pull two different places? You know, is it Chippewa Library and the Oakland Library?
Why not? I mean, you know, it depends how much you know. Maybe you want to try one this year and do two next year. I mean, you know, I mean, how much?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's certainly in terms of an ultimate direction to go, sure, why not? I mean, I don't see any reason why not to.
Would we be able to staff two different locations?
Oh, you mean simultaneously?
Yes.
I think you'd be better off doing it on two different dates, maybe fairly close to one another, but, you know, does it have to be on that specific day?
They are saying that it's one day in the year, and it's, it's Saturday, third Saturday.
September
20. Yeah, I would try, you know, always is better to walk before you run. So, I mean, I would try one, you know, and see how that goes and learn from that, you know, and if you, some things you'd want to do better.
I know that Oakland Library is open on Saturdays from 10 o'clock in the morning till 5 or 6 o'clock.
Don't know. I mean, it's open most of the day, right?
So if we would be there, let's say, like, from, if you would have been there, we would be there from 12 to 4, that's 4 hours. That's probably plenty of time. As well as, you know, if they tell you that you need to be in a basement in a room, you don't have to be there because nobody actually welcome to a basement in a room. Then I said, can we be just outside and play guitars, you know? So that's all
right. If I play the guitar up front, you will have people in the basement in that room.
Then run away.
We'll just strategically place guitar players everywhere where we don't want the people. And we'll have to tell them, okay, start playing once the person's past you, so they speed up.
Well, they have the book sale every year. The university has their Friends of the Library, I think they're called. They have their book sale, and it's in that basement room. People don't seem to have any trouble finding their way into there.
But people buying books is more obvious than telling them there is a free software somewhere.
Yeah, maybe.
It might be easier to just someplace really public and. Here you go.
That's the nice thing with the public library. You say public library to anybody really in town. They basically
you know where it is.
Where it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's right there. So it's a little more complicated to say, okay, it's in this building at the university, and go through this room, it's down there. It's my
they're not going to find it.
I
got
great
strawberries and raspberries.
You use public library. Now, do they try to get that? We actually have computers set up where people break things, or?
No, we would be passing the stuff out and saying that here's a free software or anything we do.
I think we could have a couple laptops there.
Where do you get the software?
From www.downloadfreesoftware.com.
No, I mean, is it on their Software Day site?
Yeah. If you register, they'll send you a bunch of CDs. And, but we're saying that a lot of people, they have a problem that there's a big jump between going from the Windows and tell them to use OpenOffice on Windows to
here's some operating system that you've never heard of, which we all love.
And then wipe out your current system at home and put this on.
Yes. So I think that Byron was suggesting that maybe what we need to do is provide our own CD with, we will have these pieces of applications there. Maybe we need to have an HTML page, which when they put it in there, there's Autorun, it actually opens the browser with a page saying that if you want to do it here, this is what you do. If you don't want to do this, this is what you do.
And you know, we put all the open source stuff that's got Windows versions. Yes. I mean, you put OpenOffice on there, you put Mozilla or Firefox, you put the GIMP, Inkscape, maybe Scribus or something, you know, all the big ones that have Windows versions.
Yes.
Like Audacity, you know, anything that you might want to do that you might, you know, you see the free software, and then the next step is really easy once they're already using free software.
They might ask you, is there something in this area? And you say, well, it is, but it is not on Windows, it is actually on this other operating system. And you'd be willing to try it. So, before we run the blog, so maybe this year we are providing free software on the Windows platform. Next year, on the same location, we might mix, if there's a next year, we might mix actually the
Ubuntu and the Windows.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
far, the people who have been here did have no problem. They got the browser. We just switched 2 days ago, switched them all to Ubuntu. Because the main reason is because all the channels I wanted to kill.
Yeah.
People have MySpace and Facebook and whatever, mm-hmm. chat, and some work, but then I know they don't go in the system, so they're just a pop-up, you know, I don't care about, but then that's something they have to install, I don't want it anymore.
Yeah. Right, but the one thing too, though, you don't want people to be installing or running those things on these PCs. On the home PC, you want the people to be able to do whatever they want, so... It might be a little bit tougher situation.
Vision, though, integrate, I think that's the same now, integrate with all of those chat programs and all.
Right, but it's just the little things like I want to do this. Oh, well, you can't quite do that the same way.
Cool. So that's what we have. That's what I have now. That was a tool. All right. Can we do a presentation?
We do. Do we have time to do it?
Maybe, if you are really fast, like in 2 minutes.
121,617,000,000 pages searching.
And right after they announced that, Google announced their trillion URLs.
Yeah. Alright, let's see if I can figure out how to get
90% of which are either spam, business sites.
Well, let me talk about
they don't index all of them.
When we talk about Google, let's say like the Firefox 3, I got to a site and it was supposed to be Ivy replaced, and it was copycats, and they were saying this site is known for hosting malware, so, and it is actually coming from Google, so it was interesting.
I run AVG at home, and before I get to a page, like if I'm in Google, it goes through, and I don't know if it checks every link on the fly, but it goes through, and its little symbol will appear next to pages that it says are safe. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's like referring to a master database and pulling that off. I know they got a little bit of heat a few weeks ago that their algorithm was a little too aggressive, and it was causing a lot of bandwidth to sites that were like, why are we suddenly getting hits? And then you look in there and you see AVG's little bot going 20 times a second.
Yeah, they backed it off a lot.
There it is. Look at that. Isn't that pretty?
Wow. This is like direct.
Cross your eyes.
Hang on. I think I got to turn off display one, otherwise it's not going to work. There we go. Look at that.
You know, I have a faith in Fedora.
Now I don't have, there we go, why does the menus not work? Whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of like
whatever.
SketchUp.
We're doing this, we're doing this full screen anyway, so it doesn't matter. Oh, offset pages. Hang on a second.
I'm going to change the screen resolution here so we're not... Oh, yeah, I know.
I know Fedora can do it.
System hardware. Screen resolution. No, I think it's more a problem with the ATI video card versus Fedora. There we go.
Oh, it's fine to me.
Oh, come on. You gotta be kidding. Hang on.
All of us have a presentation ready.
Now it's off the screen because it's... Whatever. All right. This will work. This will work.
So what is this presentation?
Okay, this presentation is on open source licenses. Now, I didn't go through all the open source licenses because we didn't want to be here until next Tuesday. So I just went through a couple of the common ones. And I guess with the licenses, there's three main points, and I only listed two of them. So, pretty much the two main points, I meant to change that to a two, I really did. Whether the derivative code has to be released or not, that's one of the main points, and that's called copyleft. And copyleft is using copyright law to retain your freedom. We'll talk about that in a second. And then the other part is what is and isn't considered derivative code versus with the dynamic linking and static linking. So what is copyleft? It is using copyright law to retain your freedom. So the copyright says the code, your code has to stay free, pretty much what the copyleft license says. Like the GPL or the CPL are two examples, the GPL being the common one. It says that if you modify the code, you have to release your changes back to the community. So it's using the copyright in order to keep the code always free. And authors can sue if you don't follow copyright, so it forces you to release your code. And it's actually more restrictive than something like a BSD-style license, because the BSD-style license doesn't restrict what you can do with it. It's not a copyleft license. It doesn't say you have to release your changes. You can do whatever you want. But it forces the copyleft forces companies to release their improvements to everyone. But the BSD-style, somebody can improve on it, and that's it. You'll never see the code again.
Apple
or Microsoft. There's actually BSD code in Windows. I think they rewrote it for Vista. Yep. See what I mean? It doesn't fit.
Just tell us what it's all about.
All right, the GNU GPL stands for the GNU General Public License. It's pretty much a leading OSS license, and there are now three versions of it. Version 1, pretty much says vendors distributing the binaries must also distribute human readable source, and the union of a GPL code and any other code must be released under GPL. So that's what they're really talking about when they say the GPL is viral. It's anything that the GPL touches is GPL. So if you modify the GPL, if you put two pieces together, the whole thing goes to GPL.
I noticed you were listed earlier, the dynamic and static linking, are you covering all GPL in this as well?
Yep, that'll be on the next one. Version 2 is pretty much the same as version 1, except for it added a couple of clauses, and the main one being that the license to the code is revoked if you can't follow the GPL due to other copyright restrictions or other restrictions. So pretty much it was, DRM and a little bit touching on the patent issue. If you can't follow the GPL, you don't have a license to use it at all. And the first one didn't say anything about that, so it's just more of a clarification. Right, some other legal requirement.
Oh, okay.
Like you could put something in, GPL it, but you have some license that says that only you can use it. Anybody who's using that, you know, they don't have the rights to it.
But this allows conflicting licenses.
Right. Now, the version 2 was kind of confusing, and there were some issues with it, so they came up with version 3. And this is supposed to be the version 2
from 1991.
Yeah, version Right, so I don't think it's, I think it started on one and then went to two.
I think you started a little confusion, I guess, but it was right around the time.
Yeah. So version three pretty much added a few clauses to try and clean some of the stuff up and make things more free. Pretty much it added a little bit better compatibility with some other licenses. And it also clarified something too. It even went more in depth to say that you, if you cannot follow the GPL due to any other restrictions at all, then you can't use the GPL, or you don't have a license to the GPL. So pretty much it eliminated the patented software that you put in GPL code. If you put patented software in the GPL code, you have to also give a license to use that patent, an unrevocable, what did they say? Unrevocable, I can't remember exact words, but you can't put patented code in there. And also, a big thing, hardware must not restrict users from changing the GPL, or from changing the GPL code so that you can only run their piece of software. Pretty much you can't get the TiVo effect where they sign the binaries and you try and put a different binary on there, it won't run. That would be against the GPL version 3. So, yeah. So the LGPL kind of followed along with the regular GPL. It's the lesser general public license. It's pretty much the same thing as the GPL, except for the big difference is you can link from non-GPL software to LGPL software. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same restrictions as GPL. Now, the thing is that it has to be dynamically linked. I've read some... No, you cannot compile against it. You would have to...
You cannot statically link anything. It has to be compiled dynamically so that if there is a flaw or a change in the program, in what the program is linking to, you have to have the ability to update
that. Right, and what I read was that if you're using the LGPL, you have to be able to take that, the LGPL code completely out of the program, replace it with something completely different, and the program would still run. If you can do that, then you're in compliance with the LGPL. And then obviously if you make any changes to that LGPL module, then you also have to release the source code to those changes. The CPL, Common Public License, it's very similar to the GPL, pretty much almost the same. Any changes to your code must be released, so it's a copyleft license. Contributors of patented code must grant an irrevocable royalty-free license, and it's incompatible with the LGPL because of a certain clause that says if there is some sort of conflict, you can only pursue it in this certain court, which makes it not compatible with the GPL or the LGPL. Otherwise, it's virtually the same thing as the LGPL. But just because of that little clause, you can't copy code back and forth.
Who is the sponsor of CPL?
I believe IBM is the one who wrote it up. And yep, it's the same thing as the GPL. Any code that you include into a CPL program becomes CPL. So it's copyleft, similar to the GPL. Zlib license is probably one of the most liberal licenses that you can have. Pretty much the only things that it says is the author can't claim that they wrote the software. So you can't say, I wrote this software. And you can't remove the license. Other than that, go crazy, do whatever you want with it.
It's like public domain.
It's almost public domain. Public domain would be, you can claim you wrote it, you can remove the license, you can do anything. This is, the only thing is you can't remove the license notice and you can't claim that you wrote it.
You know what is the issue with the public domain? because somebody can take the code and license it under different licenses.
Yep, and say it's theirs.
It's theirs, and it's, yep.
If you release it, you have to release it with some sort of license, otherwise you have to if it's released unlicensed, you have to at that point, the only thing that can save you is having proof of their existence.
If you can't, on the Zealot, if you can't claim that you wrote it, but yet somebody maybe took
the original software.
I'm not going to do
it. But even if you did, how can you, how could you prove that it was yours? So, like, if somebody broke the license agreement because they removed the license from it,
how could you complain about it?
Yeah, exactly.
You
how could
you wrote it? So
you can't say that you wrote it.
It's pretty
so
much
you
on
have
the honor
legal
system.
Standing.
Well, it's there's really no way to
this is honor.
It's more of if somebody breaks it, they'll find a way to try and disprove it just for the fact of disproving it because you're doing something.
Basically, has two purposes. One is it can be used with anything. It's compatible with pretty much every other license out there. And two, can't steal it, basically. If you steal it, it's probably going to be in a form that nobody's going to recognize anyway. So at that point, he wanted it to be free. So the point was he had to license it with something. And all the licenses he found were too restricted to get broad compatibility like he wanted, because obviously Zealot is a very highly used function. And he just had to license it under something. Like we just talked about,
realistically, you could probably say this is public domain.
It's about as close as you can get.
Close as you can get without actually doing it. Probably the next least restrictive would be the BSD license. It's generally free to use for whatever purpose you want, as long as proper credit is given. Right now, it's the current BSD license is referred to as a three-clause license. There's three clauses in the current BSD license. The redistribution of source code must contain the original license and copyright. Redistribution in binary form must be accompanied by the license and copyright in an auxiliary file or whatever. And contributors' names cannot be used to endorse products without their written consent. Because apparently they were having issues with somebody would write the code, they see the name in there, hey, okay, well, this guy, you know, says that our code is the best. And they were just using contributors' names. So those are really the three main clauses of the BSD. Otherwise, it's free to use in commercial, for commercial purposes, modify it however you want.
What does BSD stand for?
Berkeley
Software Distribution.
It doesn't actually require you to release the source, though, does it?
It does not require you to release the source. No.
If you don't, you have to have that accessory file. Okay.
Right. The accessory file just has to have the license and copyright, not the source.
That's what Apache is like, something like that.
Apache
has their own license.
They have their own license. It's very, very similar.
They're original. Yeah, they're based on
BSD. Yep. I have the Apache license on here, so. Another one, the MIT license, or actually X11. They prefer you call it X11, but everybody calls it MIT. But they say since MIT's got a bunch of licenses, you should probably refer to it as the X11 license. It is the exact same thing as the BSD license, but it doesn't have the no endorsement clause. So it would be identical to a BSD 2 clause license. So it's got the redistribution of source code has to contain the license and copyright, and redistribution in binary form has to have a license and copyright. And that's really the only restrictions on the code. And there are some modified X11 licenses that also have a clause similar to the BSD license. So really all of these BSD-based licenses are kind of muddy. They'll have like the base license and then they'll have slight modifications that make them just like another license. So they may say released under the X11 or BSD license, but they're all generally the same thing.
Yeah,
and you'll have to specifically read that license to get the fine details. The Apache one is very similar to the BSD license, only it's a little bit more restrictive. It includes all the clauses, just like the three clauses of the BSD license, but it also includes one clause about patented code sections. It says that any patented code sections must include a license from the patent holder to use those sections. So it's virtually the BSD with an extra clause that says, if you put patented code in, you have to be the patent holder and you have to give us a license to use it. Creative Commons is actually a group of software licenses, not one software license. And it's actually not suggested to be used for code, it's more for media. You could use it for code, but again, they don't really suggest it. And it's kind of confusing. There are six different versions of Creative Commons that are in widespread use. Attribution alone, which pretty much means you can do anything with it as long as you give proper attribution. There's an attribution plus no derivatives, meaning that you can't modify it and you have to give attribution, but you can use it. There's a non-commercial clause that says you can modify it, but you can't use it in a commercial sense. And then there's share alike, which is very similar to a copyleft license, where any changes have to be released under the exact same license. And then there's combinations of the above parameters, where you have to give attribution, you can't use it for commercial purposes, and you can't make derivatives of it, or you can't use it for commercial purposes, and you have to share it with everyone, your modifications. So realistically, it's the Creative Commons is kind of confusing in that manner, and if somebody says they released it under the Creative Commons, you really have to read into it to find out which one of those they actually meant and which one is actually released under. So it may not be, you may not be able to just use it for whatever purpose you want.
So which license do you pick for recording?
Which license would you pick for recording?
No, not commercial share alike.
Can't use it for commercials, and anything you do has to be released. That sounds like a good license. It would probably be that or just the non-commercial clause.
This would be for like actually the music itself, you saying?
Yes.
Not software, obviously. It says not
music
software.
Or content. Photos,
even
video,
posters, electronic
content.
Oh, okay. Designs that you made.
All right.
Your icon set for your PC. That's mainly what this license is meant for.
The one problem this license runs into is dealing with photos. It's come up a lot recently when people are involved in the photos. You don't have the permission or license to license other people's images. That came up where somebody, like pretty much everything, most things that go on Flickr are usually posted under a Creative Commons license. And I forget what company it was, but some major company created commercials with photos from Flickr. And it was all they were released under a Creative Commons by. So they only had to attribute, which they did. They provided a link and information, but it was somebody else's photo that was posted, and that person is the one who has the right.
The original person who posted it did not have the right to post it onto Flickr.
Right.
That uses the Creative Commons.
Or well, still, even though if you would do it actually non-commercial, non-derivatives.
But
they have the right to put it on Flickr, but they don't have the right to license it under a Creative Commons license.
Technically, yeah. Since Flickr is a public site, you don't have the rights to put it on Flickr. Because it is a public showing of somebody else's likeness, you don't have the rights to do it without their permission.
Unless you put your profile and say, only my buddies can see it.
That's private, though. Right?
Yeah.
That separates
the two. I don't think that anything that goes into a private library can be licensed under Creative Commons. I'm not sure.
So how can you license our video looking at here?
How would I license it? Attribution alone.
Don't show.
Go ahead, cut out our heads, make them float around in space and shooting laser bolts. That's fine with me.
Well, it could be licensed under whatever everybody agrees to as well. As
but
right,
if you would
right.
license it under one of these six categories.
most likely.
Per yeah. video, if you want to license it.
If you want to license it under the Creative Commons, yes. You can always put it in the public domain and then just do what you will with it. You don't have to attribute it or anything. And this is not going to really work too well, but I had a picture here of kind of which, well, it's got most of them on there, which licenses can actually go to which licenses. You can see that Zlib over on the left is really the most free. It can go to pretty much everything. And then MIT is a little bit more restrictive. It can't go back to the Zlib license. And then BSD is probably the next most restrictive. It can't go back to MIT or Zlib. And then over on the right, you can't quite see that, but it's got the GPL version 1, 2, and 3. And you can see
Apache is compatible with 3.
With 3, but it's not compatible with the rest because Apache had that one clause that talked about the patents, which made it not compatible with version 1 or version 2. So you can only change something from the Apache license to version 3.
Okay. Which also with the GPL license, if something is released under originally stated version 1 license, it can be also licensed under the 2 and 3. However, if it's released under the 3, it cannot be licensed under 2 and 1.
Right. You can't see the arrows. Right, and then you can also see that the CPL is pretty much about the same. You can go from any of the BSD style licenses to the CPL. Can't go from the LGPL to the CPL because of that one clause about the court that you have to.
So CPL is the destination as well as GPL is the destination.
Pretty much, yes. Once they're in CPL or GPL form, that's it. There's really no place to go other than that. And what do licenses mean to you? If you're not a programmer, probably not a whole lot. Pretty much these open licenses only apply when you're distributing any modifications. So you can use a program, and even if you don't agree to the license, it's completely okay. As long as you don't distribute any changes, it doesn't matter. And pretty much even if you're distributing pieces of software, it doesn't matter as long as you're distributing an unmodified binary and all the auxiliary files with it are included. So realistically, unless you're programming and looking to put pieces together, you probably don't have to even look at what license it is as far as the open source licenses. Obviously there are other...
So if you provide the open source license on your own personal website,
Ubuntu ISO should have all the licensing right on the ISO. So by doing that, you are...
You're okay.
Right, and plus, since the ISO is an unmodified binary, that will also have links back to their sites which have all the source. You don't technically have to provide the source as long as you provide a link to the source. From
you don't have to have the source with it as long as there's the ability to get it in some
computer. Right.
But if I write code, and let's say I stick it to a or source code, I don't actually have to host the source on my site.
You can host the source anywhere that you want as long as it's available. So if it's a SourceForge site, you can host the source on SourceForge, and that's sufficient for the open licenses.
Here's a question. What about, you know, when you program those little microcontrollers and use it with Linux, GCC, to program them, is that then has to be released, the code that you wrote from the microcontroller that might do nothing more than run a coffee maker?
And there's been a few people who have taken it like that and have argued against that, but GCC has actually came out with a statement saying that no, any code that's created from the program is not licensed under the license of the program. It would be the same thing for like an image manipulation program.
Oh, the image
right.
itself.
The image
not,
itself is not under the license.
To the GIMP license. If you're creating a picture from
yeah. At least with yeah. the GIMP license the way it is. I mean, they very well could put something in the license to do
that.
Says
all images created by GIMP is our
right. But no, GCC does not. The code does not go to.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And yeah, that. Well, I think enough. Oh, thanks, man. Very nice. Yeah. Good job. So we're gonna talk about licenses. I forgot something. I submitted a recording to the podcast without
thank you for listening to Hack the Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.